Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
As you're turning this podcast up in your car or in your house, you're likely also turning up your air conditioning, if you're lucky enough to have it. We're in the dog days of summer, and as I listen to the weather reports every day, all I hear is news about heat waves.
The GTA grapples with a heat warning over the Canada-long weekend.
Heat waves.
It is going to be muggy tonight, tomorrow, tomorrow night, Monday, and Monday night, okay?
Heat waves.
Well, a heat wave in Canada is being blamed for at least 70 deaths.
Oh, and extreme weather conditions. With record heat waves this month on all 4 continents in the Northern Hemisphere, clearly something is going on, right? This can't be a climate coincidence, can it? At what point do we stop using the term heat wave and start using those divisive terms climate change and global warming? And more importantly, what, if anything, can we actually do to help? I'm Donovan Bennett, staff writer and host for Sportsnet. This is The Big Story.
I think we need to accept the fact that we have changed the planet, the kinds of changes we've seen have happened within our lifetime, and that we have a responsibility to do things differently.
David Phillips is a senior climatologist for Environment Canada and the author of Blame It on the Weather. If anyone can make sense of this, he can. So first things first, so we know what we're talking about, what is the actual temperature on the planet now?
Well, I mean, it's hard to know what it is at this particular instant. If you stick a thermometer in the planet, all we know is that it is it's clearly warmer than it has been in a long while. I mean, we're breaking records on this planet just like crazy. I mean, this summer has been excruciatingly warm. I mean, there are 4 continents that are going through heat waves all at the same time. Of course, all in the Northern Hemisphere, because this is when our summer is right now. And we're very close to what we call the dog days of summer. I mean, this time in July, usually a month after the longest day of the year, there is that lag effect. And this is where the Earth is still absorbing heat from the sun and giving it up and roasting the temperatures. And, of course, in Canada, this is often the week, the last week of July, the first week of August, where Canadians take their holidays. I mean, they almost as if they're weather weenies. They know when it's usually the warmest, though the water temperature is the warmest. But clearly, there's no question about it. It's been warm in Canada right from coast to coast. We've seen heat spells, heat waves. We see it in Europe, in Africa, in parts of Asia, in the United States. It's almost as if the planet is burning up in some areas. And we certainly know it's another warm year. I mean, my gosh, you'd have to go back almost 40 years to find a year that was actually cooler than normal globally.
So apologies in advance. I'm going to use the F word. How much does the burning of fossil fuels contribute to all of this?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of, I guess there's a bit of a debate. I think what I can say, let me say this. If we look at globally in the last few years, we know that we're living through warmer times. If you look at it, again, globally, not just in Canada or Ontario or the Yukon, but all of the world, and you stick a thermometer in that, if we look back over a relatively short period, say 135 years, then 16 of the 17 warmest years in 135 years have all occurred since the year 2000. We're living through warmer times, no question about it. And when you look at those factors, that physical factors that control the climate, such as the sun's output, the Earth's tilt, the volcanism, the oceans, if you look at the last 35 years, we should have actually been cooling off on this planet, not warming up. And so the only reason we're warming up is what people have done. the fossil fuels that we've burned that have changed the atmosphere, the way in which the heat is absorbed or released at the surface of the Earth. And at the same time, we're also changing our land use too. And I think that's often the unknown factor. It's we always blame it coming what's coming out of our tailpipes and smokestacks, the fossil fuel burning, which no question about it. The world is warmer and our human signature is all over it.
So there's a flip side to that coin, and some people have felt that the Earth's temperature fluctuates over time and we're just on an upswing. Is there any truth to that, or is that a bit of a misnomer?
No, I think there's clearly no question about it. I mean, we can't rule out the fact that, hey, there may be another ice age coming. It won't be in our lifetime for sure. But what we're seeing on the planet, and it's not just temperatures. I mean, you don't just necessarily trust a climatologist when you're looking at temperature or rainfall records. Look at the other aspects of change on this planet, environmental change, which all are in response to the fact that we're living through warmer times. We're seeing sea levels are rising. And why are sea levels rising? Well, it's because, in fact, the glaciers are melting, but in fact, water expands. It's grade 9 science. You warm up the water, and it fills more space and expands. So no wonder the seas are rising, because the sea temperatures are warmer. We're Canada. We have more glaciers than any other country in the world, and we're losing our glacial ice mass in the south at 6 times faster now than they did in the 1980s.
So language matters. Words have meaning. Mm-hmm. We talk about these things and we say heat waves. Do we need to start saying climate change and global warming?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I think that certainly we've used heat waves for centuries. I mean, that's not just been something that's not a 2018 kind of term. I mean, there's a lot of controversy over the definition of when it becomes a heat wave or a heat spell. Typically, we want to have 3 days in a row with temperatures above 30, but also nighttime temperatures being high. And it varies in different parts of Canada. A heat wave in Atlantic Canada is different than one on the prairies. But it all ends up with the same. It has a serious human effect for people. It kills people. It causes them to have a hospitalization higher. It's just under the weather. Productivity is down and what have you. Even the word natural disaster. You know, I'm often humored by the word natural disaster. I think it's we call them natural disaster. I never met a natural disaster that didn't have some human DNA associated with it. We call them natural disasters to absolve our responsibility from it. And, you know, the hazard may, in fact, be created by nature, but I think the disaster is often a result of human intervention, the fact that we live where we shouldn't live. We live in floodplains and avalanche zones and by the sea. I mean, a third of the people in the world live within 100 kilometers of the ocean. I mean, these are graveyards in the waiting. You have when the oceans rise in terms of sea levels, well, that same old storm that you had will have greater inundation and create more coastal flooding and erosion, you say. So I think what we do, where we live and how we have change transformed the surface of the Earth, human beings, I think, in fact, makes those events of the past, those little hits of the past, major, major blows.
It's interesting to hear you talk about us as human beings absolving ourselves of responsibility, and we're supposed to be the caretakers of the Earth. But we now live in a developed world. What can we realistically do about it at this point, or are we past the point of no return?
Well, I hope we're not past the point of no return. I think it's one that we have to recognize that, hey, it's not just it's that we have had a component in this, that we are responsible for it. I think the problem has been created by human beings, and the solution is one of human beings coming together to recognize that they've changed. It's not one of pointing fingers. It's about changing behavior, changing attitudes. attitudes, doing things differently. I mean, the thing is, all the blowing you do does not stop that storm from coming your way. But you can prepare for it. You can do things differently to cushion the blow, to prevent it from becoming a disaster. I often say that flooding is an act of God, but floods and flood disasters are an act of man or a human being. It's what we do to turn that hazard into something that is more of a disaster that I think is somewhat of the problem. And you know, I may sound like doom and gloom. I try not to be. I try to focus on successes and solutions. But I think we need to accept the fact that we have changed the planet, that we have the kinds of changes we've seen have happened within our lifetime, and that we have a responsibility to do things differently.
This is a bipartisan issue. It doesn't discriminate. It impacts all people from all walks of life, which is why I wonder what needs to happen for people actively to care more. If we don't change our ways, how bad will these natural disasters get, let's say, in the next 10, 20, 30 years? What can we expect to see if this trend continues?
Well, I mean, it's always hard to know. I mean, what we know is from a temperature point of view, we've seen the future. It's going to be warmer, warmer, warmer. It may be wetter, but maybe the wetness will not match the increase of temperature. I mean, we think that the models tell us about 10-15% more precipitation, but the problem is it will occur in heavier doses. So those garden variety thunderstorms may be, in fact, real Texas gully washers, where we end up with very dry conditions and all of a sudden more flooding conditions. We know that with warmer and more humid conditions, we already know that. We were living in a warmer and more humid world, and storms are getting more powerful. They're getting more energetic. And you know, when I talk to Canadians about the future, I say, you know, it doesn't mean we're going to have slushier winters and earlier springs. Our problem will be with greater extremes of weather. I mean, it's grade 9 science to say when you warm up the world, it causes the atmosphere to hold more moisture, and so you're going to get that heavier gush of rain when it does fall. Now, in terms of extreme weather, the models are less clear on that. We just don't know. We have a suspicion that tornadoes and hurricanes and wild weather events will be more prevalent. In Ottawa this summer, they went, I think, 7 weeks where they got, a piddly little amount of precipitation. At the same time, they had temperatures that were rocketing up there to 35 degrees. It was one of the longest stretches of dry, hot weather they've ever seen. And then it all came to a crashing end in 4 days. They got like a summer's worth of rain in 4 days, where they were now standing in water. Well, that's the kind of situation that we're going to see more of in the future.
This is one of the few topics where information is only so powerful. You can do models until you're blue in the face, but that data alone can't impact change. How much of the change that we really need to see relies on governmental support with policies and legislation?
Well, that is a good question, Donovan. I mean, that is really what, I mean, because you see, climate change is something we've never, it's so foreign to us. There's no psychological or historical connection that we have to climate change. You know, when I talk to Canadians about climate change, you know, you get that kind of glossed over look, that faraway look, that raised eyebrows. I think, isn't it about skinny polar bears? Isn't it about something exotic or foreign or ozone holes? Or is it not going to affect my barbecue on the weekend? Well, and you say it's a slow motion kind of change. It's not like it's a tremor, not an earthquake. And you know, we're just not skilled at knowing how to handle it. And I'm not giving Canadians a way out. I'm not giving politicians sort of a free pass on this, but it's not something that we historically are connected with. We can handle an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. We can handle trade issues and unemployment and terrorism. But how do you handle something that you may not be around to see? You know, it's almost as if you need trust. You need a new kind of leadership to suggest that, hey, we need to do something. And then you need trust. I mean, and who trusts the scientists, you see? We often hear, well, they're just feathering their own bed. They're looking for more grants or monies, you see. So it's one that I can understand a reluctance to do something. And people don't like change. They'd rather have the situation they have than be told they're going to have to change their behavior or their attitudes or what have you. So it's not something that's easy. I mean, I accept it. It's not something that you can lecture people on, and even if they get a wild bout of weather, I've had people say to me that, well, you know, we've had the 100-year storm, so we're safe for 99 more years. Well, it doesn't work that way, do you see? It's like being hit by lightning. People think that, well, I've had people tell me they build buildings on places where lightning's hit. Supposedly, lightning doesn't hit twice in the same place. Well, it seems to me if lightning hits once, there's maybe something about that area that attracts lightning, you say. So, you know, I think it's not something that I can understand the reluctance. But, you know, and this is why we need to... It's almost like winning over people. My sense is that I have great hope in youth, that they will see the way, that they will do things differently. It won't be a big ticket item for them. It's just a behavioral change. You can get people to change their ways and feel good about it. And I think Canadians need guidance from government powers to say, well, we need to do this. We need to change this. And, you know, it's not as if it's that's so difficult. As I say to mayors and councilors, there are things in your toolbox that you can do to make your community more resilient to climate change. It could be like tax incentives. You know, they have properties to raise taxes. They have building codes. They can do land use planning and mapping and floodplain mapping. They can decide, I'm not going to allow building in the floodplain. Would that be ever a breath of fresh air? So it's not foreign to us. It's just that it's a behavioral change that people have to accept and have to do something about it. And we do it, you know, one person at a time, I guess.
Well, David, I have West Indian blood, so although I enjoy the warm weather, I don't enjoy what it might mean for the future of our planet. I'll be using my air conditioning responsibly and following your work very carefully. Thanks so much for taking the time away from your many models to educate myself and our listeners.
You're very welcome, Donovan. I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word to you and your listeners, and I hope people see it as more of a positive conversation and not one of more doom and gloom.
That was David Phillips, senior climatologist at Environment Canada, and that was the big story. And we've actually just passed the one-month mark, and we've had a great response. Thank you for being a part of it with us. Please continue to like, to subscribe, and share. And for more of this, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at Big Story Podcast, and of course, subscribe wherever you get your pods and tell your friends. I'm Donovan Bennett. It was a blast to fill in. Thanks for hanging out.